podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. And today I'm joined by Stephanie Taylor, school psychologist and clinical director for psychoeducational services at Presence Learning. Stephanie has experience in teaching and school psychology, servicing a variety of students, schools, and communities. After joining Presence Learning in 2014, she's been able to provide her expertise in education to develop and launch psychoeducational services aimed at providing school psychology services, teleassessment, general behavioral and mental health services for students. Stephanie, so nice to have you back on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Nice to have you here. You know, Stephanie, with all the changes that we've experienced within the past year and a half due to COVID, and as we see the ongoing impact of this pandemic, we're getting a real appreciation for how our mental health has and continues to be affected. Given the population children that you work with, how are you seeing the mental health needs of our children being different today than before the pandemic?
I always like to kind of set the scene by saying, what makes for good mental health services, or what needs to happen in the development of a child to help them to be a social and emotionally competent and secure adult really hasn't changed over time. The pandemic hasn't necessarily, you know, made new rules, made new things that we need to do. What it's done though is any little cracks in anybody's armor that were there. So maybe things that they've been dealing with, or depression, or a variety of mental health needs, things that people were dealing with on a day-to-day basis, the pandemic and the change in routines, the change in schedules, and especially the actual new traumatic events that were happening for people have really brought to the surface all of the things that children particularly were already struggling with, as well as created new trauma. To me, the biggest difference between now and prior to the pandemic is that there was a little bit of time prior to the pandemic. There was time to find the students that needed the support. There was time to figure out what they needed. There was time to address those needs. And now it's like everything has come to a head at one time. And there are so many people with such a high level of need that we don't have any time anymore. Everything needs to be addressed immediately if we want to reduce the potential for long-term effects with students, and we want to mitigate some of the lifelong potential issues that they could be having.
That's a really great perspective. I'm hearing two things. One, it showed some of the cracks and that we may not see. I think of that Chinese saying that people are like tea. You know, you don't know their true strength or character until you put that tea bag in boiling water. And then, like you're saying, these gaps or these deficits in mental health, maybe the strength of their coping abilities or their relational abilities to connect with others, you know, on a day-to-day basis, we may not see these so clearly, but COVID did create, you know, an opportunity to see some of these things. Plus, like you're saying, some new mental health challenges due to the fear and the uncertainty and isolation we've experienced. And there isn't there kind of an urgency to address these things early before some of those things created by COVID get too much of a foothold.
I agree with all that. And I also think that children take their cues from the adults in their lives also.
Right.
So when children are having traumatic events or when children are struggling with a mental health need, they often look to those adults they have relationships with to help them to kind of, how am I supposed to cope with this? How am I supposed to get this? And obviously it so happens that during a worldwide event such as the pandemic, the adults in their lives were also in precarious positions in a lot of the times, and they couldn't model necessarily good coping skills, or they going through some of their own uncertainties, or there were deaths that were impacting the adults as well as the children. And if we couple that with the fact that they were not in school. School provides a level of consistency and that interaction with trusted adults that kids come to rely on, and having that out of their lives and then trauma and distress added to their lives really was just a double whammy of events for children.
That's really a great summation right there. Kids do as well as the parents are going to do, and they see things through their parents' eyes and their reactions. But this was a pretty overwhelming time. And you're right. One of the main consistent things in their lives, school, was taken away. And that sometimes is a really safe place for most. You know, I want to actually talk a little bit about what schools can be thinking about and striving towards in terms of their students' mental health and well-being. But first, aside from the impact of COVID, in your work, what do you see being some of the underlying stressors causing some of the mental health issues in our children today? And what are some of the mental health problems you're seeing them present?
You know, I don't want to be one of those people who grows up and says, well, these kids today, right? Yeah. Every generation has its own struggles and its own particular set of issues to deal with. Yeah. But the thing that I will say about the generation that is in schools right now is that they are growing up and forming relationships in very different ways than any generation prior to them. Yeah. It doesn't make it worse or better. It just makes different. It different.
That's right.
And because of that, we almost have to reestablish what are the norms of social development, because if we take these kids and we compare them to the norms of generations prior to them, they all seem askew. And clearly not every child can be an aberration. So that means that we have to readjust what is our normal range of development. Yeah. And that's my caveat. I'm going to put that out there, that I am adjusting to what is a typical range of development now.
However, I think that's significant. What you're saying is it's not just all the kids today. No, it's not about that. There's a unique developmental environment that we have to look at in order to assess these things contextually in a meaningful way, so we can adjust and focus some of our treatment of approaches to that unique developmental environment that they're growing up in. I agree with that.
Absolutely. And when you really look at, again, kind of how I'm saying, like, the pandemic didn't change what is necessary social emotional development, I don't think that having a new set of developmental standards changes the ultimate goal or changes the skills that you're trying to get to, but it does significantly change what you can expect at which ages, and, you know, what are the things that children need to be able to develop the missing skills.
Right.
We have to come at that with entirely new eyes, because we can't use the same standards and same eyes that we've done prior, or else we do come away with that whole, you know, thinking that every child in school right now, that there's some, you know, like, oh, these darn kids today, as I said, like, and we don't want to do that. We want to look at them as like, no, they are just children. They're just developing, and they are dealing with the world in which they live in. And we have to adjust to that and look at it and make sure that they get the development that they need, regardless of what their environment is giving them initially.
I think that emphasis is that they are dependent upon us for shepherding and stewarding the things that they are growing up in that they don't even know. They don't have any choice in. It's just their environment. And we get to know what their developmental needs are in all areas, including mental health. Leaning in just a little bit to this, tell me why you believe the schools ought to be an institution addressing children's mental health versus, let's say, entrusting the mental health of a child to their family.
So first, there are varying degrees. So if we're talking about students with significant mental illnesses, that is something that is a medical issue, and they still need support in the school system. However, like, they still are going to need services in school, but that's a different scenario, where you're talking about children that probably do have some type of outside counselor, meaning outside of the school system. They may be on medication. This is something they've probably been dealing with even before they were in the school system. So I want to set aside that group of children with significant and diagnosable mental illnesses, because that is something that families and doctors should be dealing with. And then schools should be supporting that and helping them to have consistency across all settings. When I'm talking about the opportunity that schools have to really contribute to the social and emotional development of children and to be part of that behavioral health journey, it's really for a couple of reasons. Number one, that's where kids are. Kids are in school.
8 hours a day.
Exactly. And I cannot tell you how many times, you know, I've talked to counselors that are like, the kids don't come, meaning private clinics or things where you are outside of school hours, and they're like, the parents don't bring them. You know, oftentimes the students who need the most mental health support are also, unfortunately, the students who may not have a lot of support in their households, or they don't have somebody who's going to say, all right, we have this appointment at 4 o'clock. We've got to get you there. We've got to get you home. And so schools have a unique opportunity to get kids and give them the service that they need, because they are going to be in school.
Yeah, I love that.
Secondarily, I think that even though I do not believe that we should be putting the onus of providing mental health services onto teachers, teachers are really great at noticing what is different, right? If they, you see 100 kids a day, you start to notice which kids are outliers of those groups of students. So back to figuring out the new developmental norms, if you will, when teachers in schools see so many kids, they are really, really adept at identifying the outliers by saying, these are the kids that are not quite fitting in with the development of the most of their peers. So that's why ELTS schools are really great at to be able to identify and target skills. And then lastly, I think it's just because we know how much academic skills and kind of these other life skills that you're teaching in schools are impacted by social emotional development.
Yeah.
And to provide some of that in schools is only going to, you know, bolster the outcomes that you're looking for academically as well. And that's the three reasons why I really feel that even though and this, we'll talk about funding in a minute. Sure. I'll talk about all the reasons why it is hard for schools to do this thing. But I think so many people are on that same page of saying, but it makes sense for schools to be the place where this is done.
No, that's great reasoning and rationale there. That's very well articulated. Well, then let's talk about then. So given that, tell us some ways that schools can be thinking about striving towards addressing mental health in their school system. What are you seeing the opportunity being?
Well, so to give a little bit of background about some of the challenges that schools are facing, because then I can, I'll talk about why we have some opportunities right now or why they have opportunities right now. First of all, schools are asked more and more to add more things to their school day, right? Yeah. So they're not just teaching reading, writing, and math. It's history and it's science and it's social skills and it's PE and it's electives and all the things that make for a rich and rewarding school experience. Right. And I think that it's really hard to look at those things and say, which one do we take time away from to give time to mental health services? Yeah. And of course, I'm going to argue that there is a prioritization in there, that there should be a prioritization, but it is really hard also to decide what to take time away from because of how schools are essentially judged.
Yes,
they are looked at based on their state testing scores for academic skills. Mm. And as long as that is the measurement of success in the school system, and that obviously comes down from the highest levels, that's not something that is local control. You know, a school doesn't get to say, you know what, we have a really significant population of kids, you know, this year, and we are going to take some time away from these other things, and we're going to focus on mental health. And if our state scores aren't what they should be, like, that's okay for this year. Yes.
Wouldn't that be amazing if we could do that? I love, I mean, it's not going to happen.
No.
But how healthy would that be? Yeah, truly.
I think, you know, politics aside, whatever you are, whatever people's thoughts are, from a pure mental health perspective, or really a pure scientific perspective, the more that people are allowed to respond to their unique populations, the more likely they are to meet the needs of that population. There's a reason that the different schools, you know, have different needs, that every school is coming at with their own set of challenges, whether that is cultural, whether that is socioeconomic, whether that is just historical, and trying to force all the schools to address those same reading, writing, math goals is doing a disservice to what other needs the students have.
Yeah. You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about mental health and school performance, and they're linked. I want to talk a bit more about this too. I'm thinking about mental health and school performance with respect to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, and although I might take a little bit of liberty with this, I see that the higher functions, those near the top of the pyramid, things like problem solving and learning, all things academic, are really dependent upon the prior needs being met first. Those lower on the pyramid, those components that comprise what you're saying, our mental health, feelings of positive regard towards ourselves or others, our ability to form relationships, resilience to overcome challenges, whatever those challenges may be. So when we think of the pyramid, when people recognize that academic performance is going to go down if mental health is not being addressed, then tracking this and identifying this becomes a little more critical, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I really hope that someday we can start to turn a corner on this idea that not only do good social, emotional, behavioral, mental health skills, all those things impact your academic skills, but they impact your life opportunities.
Absolutely.
And because of that, we have to stop seeing them as a subset of these other skills. We have to stop seeing them as a means to an end. Yeah. It's not, well, we should focus on mental health of students because that will get us good academic scores. It should be, we have to focus on it because they are a thing equal to and warrant their own focus and own support. And they should be seen on the same hierarchical rung as the other academic skills. But back to your prior point, the first step in getting that done is tracking those skills and determining progress and outcomes for those skills in the same way that we do the purely academic skills, because people measure what they care about, and you can't adjust something that you're not measuring.
That's really good. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Behavioral and mental health professionals provide critical support to our communities in a time when our communities need it more than ever. But they need support too, to continue their education, to connect with colleagues, and to advance their career. And so we've launched Triad, the hub for behavioral and mental health professionals. At Triad, you'll find education, community, and career resources for both current and aspiring behavioral and mental health professionals, all curated specifically for you and all for free. Visit us at hellotriad.com/BHT to register for your free professional account. Again, that's hellotriad.com/BHT. Come join the community today.
Really good. Well, talking about the measuring piece of it, and you've referenced a book before, Schools Cannot Do It Alone by Vollmer. You're saying and emphasizing, and I have a heart for teachers around this. I know the teachers are tasked with so much already, and more they're being graded on their students' performance such that there's an increased pressure on them to maximize the time that they do have to maximize the students' performance on the achievement tests. You even referenced kind of this medical model idea, how we kind of look at things in a certain way. But this time element is real, isn't it? And how we weave this into the school day.
Absolutely. Yes, I love Amy Vollmer, that Schools Cannot Do It Alone. Honestly, the thing I think I like most about that book is he's, you know, Jamie's just a citizen. He's not a teacher, not a mental health professional, not anything. And his view of what was wrong with schools, you know, quote unquote, wrong with schools, and what he thought, you know, was happening there and lazy teachers and all this stuff. And then he spent some time in schools and he saw what was actually happening and what people are actually dealing with. And it just completely, you know, blew his mind and changed his feeling about the entire school system and really where reform needs to be focused. Yeah. And I just think it's a good example of, it's really hard for an outside person to be able to see what schools are dealing with, meaning what your limitations are. And I'm not just talking about funding. I'm talking about staffing. I'm talking about incentives to keep quality staff in your school. I'm talking about fully funding education, meaning all of my local school districts, the students have to pay bus fees if they want to go anywhere. If they want to participate in extracurriculars, they're paying for that out of pocket. They have to pay a significant amount of registration fees for schools. Just a lot of things that have nothing to do with salaries, right? It's not the like, everyone should be paid more. It is, can we just really recognize that teachers are doing an amazing amount with very few resources, but the one resource that they are definitely doing without and they cannot make more of is time. Yeah. And that's kind of back to Jamie's book, is that talks about how when American schools were first put into place, they are the same length of day and the same number of days throughout the school year, more or less as they are now. But the number of things they have to teach have gone through the roof.
Yes.
And not only that, but in today's world, there are actual seat time criteria for giving like high school credit, for example. So if I am in a high school student, I have to have so many minutes in order to get credit for that. So again, back to a school's, you know, scenario, what does the school do? So yes, we want to spend time towards mental health, but we cannot take any time away from, you know, the length of our classes for other things, because then the kids literally cannot get credit for it.
Right.
And
right.
Then they can't graduate. And what sense does that make?
Right.
So those are the limitations that they're dealing with.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That perspective gives us kind of this sense of really what is happening and the challenges that are inherently a part of it. clearly you're encouraging and kind of suggesting that there's an opportunity for really a systemic change here in this. And it seems like you're seeing that there's maybe this serendipitous opportunity with COVID having presented itself for us to rethink about kind of how we do the educational component of this. And you're looking, look to redefine an educational model that's inclusive of mental health. What are some of these things possibly looking like that you're envisioning?
Yes, in a broad picture about the educational model versus medical model. A medical model currently is essentially that should any needs that students have should be dealt with through the medical institutions. So yes. Outside of school time. Yeah. However, the only students who do receive services in school are those who have diagnosable disabilities or are in special education or perhaps on 504 plans. And those are that's the small group of children money is allocated for, staff is allocated for, and that there are laws around to protect them. That's kind of medical models. Like it's a medical issue and a very tiny subset of kids, because of their diagnosable medical issue, can get the services in schools or a recognized educational determination. What I'm trying to redefine for this educational model is to say, let's stop differentiating between those things. Let's stop saying this is diagnosable, this is this level of intensity for this disability or this mental health service, and saying, let's just look at it the same way that we do academics. Because if I take reading, we have students who are successful and they do great. So that median level of kids. And then there are students that just don't quite get it. And they need some small group pull out additional instruction. And then there are kids that maybe need some one-on-one on top of that. But it doesn't mean that they have a reading disability. It means they need some additional instruction to help them and get them to the level of the other students. If we look at mental health the same way, so this number one, we're not addressing it on a broad level the way that we are like general education reading. So that's the first step is we've got to get it where, what are we doing school-wide? What are we doing across the entire institution that we're considering our base level of instruction? What is that base level instruction? And then beyond that, what are we doing for those students who are not responding to that base level instruction? What is our small group pullout? What are our one-on-one opportunities? And I think that's what we are unfortunately doing is a lot of schools are addressing the small group and the individual without necessarily making sure they've accounted for whole school based instruction first, or they are asking teachers to provide that whole school based instruction as part of character education or some of the programs that you can buy, which really are geared towards teachers being able to provide them. And yes, that's a good first step, but that is not a substitute. For, I always love to say this, you would not let a math teacher come in and teach reading. Right. You wouldn't. And there are, you have to be certified in your area. And yet we think that anybody can teach mental health skills. So they just give it to the teacher and say, follow this script and it'll be fine. Yeah. And unfortunately, not only is that problematic for back to the time issue, right? Like when do they do this and how do they fit it in and how is it prioritized over the other things that they're trying to work on in that time frame? But how are they going to deal with things that come up as a result of these lessons that they're doing? How are they going to be able to respond to whatever they may have triggered in students, whatever trauma they may have, reactivated unknowingly? Yeah. But because they are not trained professionals, they're not going to necessarily notice that. Yeah. And it puts teachers and everyone in a very precarious position of unintentionally doing harm.
Yeah. And sometimes on the other end, they want to avoid that. So they shy away from anything that could be triggering or uncovering of this. Clearly you're envisioning that this systemic change is possible in the ways you're seeing it being able to be brought in. And I know presence learning from our conversation today, but also our prior talk and what I know about your company, you guys are uniquely positioned to have a role and to make a contribution in this kind of change. Talk about some of the ways this can be so and your guys' involvement.
I think that the reason why the pandemic has given us this opportunity, which is kind of the second part of that, is that a lot of states and a lot of local districts have actually suspended their seat time requirements for last school year and for this school year because they had so much, they had to go virtual, then they were doing hybrid, and it's really hard to determine actually how many minutes you're spending on each academic area. And there are some other things that kind of just some regulations have relaxed for a second because it's just a bit of an unknown right now with the pandemic. And that is why I actually think that people could be taking an opportunity, and there is COVID relief money. There is money that's coming into schools right now for specific things regarding COVID, and particularly for like trauma-informed services. So I think that taking some money that is not usually available to schools and some loosening of some time restrictions that are usually in place, I think it's a really good opportunity to say, let's do something this year. Let's try something for this year that we don't usually have the opportunity to do. And let's give ourselves the opportunity to see some results, because once you see results, it is so much easier to keep up with it. It's so much easier to try to find the ways to keep it going. And it's so much easier to say, you know what, that was so worthwhile that we want to do X, Y, and Z to keep it going. But when you've never had the opportunity to even try it and to see the results before, it's really hard to keep at it.
It's really good. I do want to get to what presence learning is doing and how you guys are uniquely positioned to contribute to this. But what you're saying here is that schools that want to get started, this is a way that they can begin to kind of leverage kind of getting in, isn't it? With this opportunity, where the money is, et cetera.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying, is that, you know, the pandemic has been a tragic and a horrific thing for most of the world, but it has provided an opportunity that most likely would not have existed before. And for those schools, which this really, so many people are in this boat, they've wanted to do something about mental health for a long time and just didn't know how, didn't know what first steps to take to be able to, you know, get it into their system, get it carved out with some prioritization. And this, I think, is a time for the people who've been waiting to take advantage.
Really good. Well, give me some of the things that you see being able to be provided by you folks, Presence Learning. And as people are listening in, they can understand maybe where you folks can come alongside them and come into what the opportunities are to bring mental health into this educational model. Tell me more.
I think that the general areas where schools really need support can be summarized by saying they need consultation, and which I'll come back to. They need the actual services, and they need flexibility. Good. So for consultation, a lot of schools do have school psychologists. They, you know, they have folks there, but most of their time is taken up with doing testing for doing special education determinations. Most school psychologists, they're not given a lot of bandwidth to be able to provide this consultation, which is something that we're actually very uniquely situated for, which is to be giving advice on how to manage the data, right? So how do you set up your school system? How do you decide when somebody is doing okay with the base instruction, or when do they need to move on to some small group stuff? How are we tracking their progress? How do we know how many minutes of individual time they need? How do we know if one time a week is good enough, or if they need it 15 minutes, three times a week? That's the kind of stuff where when you really get into the nitty gritty of saying, we want to be efficient with our time and we want to make sure we're meeting students' needs, but we also need to like track it. We need to be able to have decision points of when we do something else. School psychologists are really uniquely trained to be able to support that and to be able to help a school system set up whatever that they want to do and figure out the data to manage it. And most schools either, again, don't, if they have access to a school psychologist, a lot of time they're doing testing. And this, so presence learning is a way to get access to that professional without having to like hire an entire full-time salaried person in addition to what you already have. It's saying, give us your top consultative folks and let us talk through our system, and we have them for the time that we need them. So that's the first thing, is just the consultation and having that level of expertise.
Good.
Secondarily, schools need staff to provide the services. They oftentimes, again, do not have access to mental health professionals. One of the things I really love about teletherapy in general is the ability to reallocate supply and demand. I can take people who live wherever they want to live, or people where there are pockets of, you know, a lot of people with certain degrees, and I can move them to the places that need them without actually having to move them. And that's really what teletherapy is amazing at, is reallocating that supply and demand so that schools can get the professionals that they need. But it also allows an incredible level of flexibility. For example, if I'm a school district and if I carve out time to say, all right, from 8 to 8:30 every day, we're going to do some school-wide mental health stuff. And maybe they bought into my premise to say that teachers shouldn't be the people to deliver that services, deliver those services. Now what? They have one school counselor, one school psychologist, maybe. Who's going to provide these services to every child in school from 8 to 8:30? That's another problem. But through teletherapy, you can bring as many people as you need in for that time. You can have them addressed just for that time, again, that you need them. And you can bring in the number that you need. So it provides flexibility as far as time of day, number of people needed. And then also it provides the same opportunity for students who are not physically in the school as well. So whether that is students who are homeschooled, whether they are homebound for some reason, and also whether there are growing number of students in virtual schools. In virtual charter schools, and that is their typical place of instruction. But because it is a virtual school, a lot of times they're not given the same opportunities. And this, you know, allows them to receive that same level of service, regardless of where they are, which is the other benefit. And presence learning particularly is really in a place to provide these, being the largest provider of these services nationwide. We've been doing these services well before the pandemic. And we will continue to do them well after, because this is about providing that flexibility and those services and these opportunities for students. Not about having a short-term alternative to education the way some people are looking at it from the pandemic. It's viable on its own. It's a whole other modality with just as much efficacy.
Yeah, I know you guys have your game very fine-tuned and been doing it the longest and the largest in, of ways. You know, I know we're kind of coming into the home stretch here, but I really like this idea that we can incorporate into our students' learning and to their classroom experience a range of skills and, like you're saying, attitudes and behaviors that could have a positive effect on their mental health and well-being, but subsequently also on the success. And what a well-rounded approach to really consider our students and meeting them where their needs are at, and having a company like Presence Learning, having these things ready-made to come into in a very manageable and very effective way into the classroom, into the school's experience. For those that are interested in learning more, Stephanie, give us some sites and some links to Presence Learning, to yourself, where people can learn more, please.
Absolutely. PresenceLearning.com is always the best to start. Yeah. It is. It's nice and clean. It's always the best place to start your learning journey. We have a link of resources on there as well that will take you to some of the research that we've actually participated in for looking at remote assessments. But we also have our eBooks and success stories and case studies. Studies for students who have been receiving behavioral and mental health services through Presence Learning and schools that are engaging in that service. It's really the best place to start.
It's a very cool site. There's a lot on there that you provide folks with. It's very generous in many ways, allowing folks to have an understanding and also access some materials. It can be really helpful to them kind of just immediately.
I was going to say, one of the new things that we have as well is that, not only does Presence Learning work with schools to be able to provide them the platform to connect with each other, I think that's one of the things really unique to Presence Learning is our platform, the amount of content that's on it, the amount of crowdsourced information, but also just the ability to interact with a student and to engage. You know, it was built by clinicians for clinicians, and we've continued to develop it to make it an engaging and interactive platform. So schools, when they get staffing through us, they also get the platform. So they get the two good things. They get our platform and our folks, our related service professionals. But we also are now offering the platform itself. So schools can license our platform to use with their own staff if they prefer, because that's another thing to do is if they think they might be hybrid or might have some virtual portions of the year coming into next year, it can license the platform and use it to keep continuity with the students throughout the year. And if I'm an individual, say mental health professional who is also providing services to students or on my own, I can now purchase the Presence Learning platform for my own use. So as a private practice clinician, And I don't have to be part of an institution. I can purchase it for a monthly or annual subscription and use it for my own private practice. So we really believe in our platform and the way that it allows people to connect with students and with their clients, that we focus as much as possible on that interaction and having a good experience with the student. That's going to lead to higher engagement, and that's going to get us where we want to go.
That's really good. You guys have some really nice videos on your site that kind of illustrate and give kind of a real nice understanding of what it looks like at this platform. It is really dynamic and it is very personal. And it's a nice way for folks, our listeners listening in, to get a sense of what you guys are offering. Well, Stephanie, hey, thanks again for being with us today. It's always nice to have you on the show, and appreciate your time with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, and I enjoy it every time.
I do as well. Well, thank you. And I want to thank you too, our listeners, for dropping by today. And we will look forward to having you join us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.